Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, CEO of Employee Cycle, and you know us. We are your friendly HR dashboard. That's right. We're helping you bring all your people data from all your different disparate and disconnected HR sources into one real-time, centralized, and beautiful dashboard. Stop using those messy spreadsheets and spending all your time managing them when you're not really spending enough time actually understanding the insights. Let us flip that around so that you're spending no time on pulling your data together and all the time on actually understanding your data. Go to employeecycle.com to check it out. Sign up for a free account, put in those API tokens from your systems and get started. But that's enough about us, because today I have a very special guest and a repeat guest that I'm really happy and lucky to have on again. So please help me introduce to the podcast, Laurie Rudiman, author and HR consultant. And today we're going to discuss why HR leaders are employees too. Laurie, welcome to the podcast.
Wow, thank you so much. I wasn't expecting that round of applause. So, you know, you're hired. Come to my house, cheer me on all the time.
Oh, I am the number one hype man. Since the last time you were here, we now have a live audience in the background. So everyone's so excited to have you here.
Oh, it's good to be back. Thank you so much.
No worries. So we're going to kick this off the same way that we always do, because people may have not heard the first time you were on the show. So Laurie, please tell us how you ended up in the wonderful world of HR.
Sure. Thanks for asking. I have worked in and adjacent to human resources for 25 years, which is insane because I'm 45 years old, which means I had my first HR job in college. And I thought it was just going to be an internship so I could learn about the world of work. And it turns out I was good at remembering names and faces and stories. And honestly, I just can't quit it. I don't know why. It's kind of an addiction, but I like figuring out what makes people tick, and I like helping people find purpose and meaning in the world. And I also have a soft spot for the underdog. So that's my HR story.
Well, then you would love Philly, where I'm from.
I do love
Philly. We are an underdog city.
I love Philly. I love everything about people who are scrappy and who fight and who have a chip on their shoulder, but use it for good. And that's Philly.
That definitely is. So let's jump right into the topic, because I think this is very interesting, especially with all the things that are going on in the world and how challenging 2020 has been. So today we're talking about why HR leaders are employees too. And so to start off in the most broadest form of this question, why is this important to you? And why do we have to remember, and why do HR leaders themselves have to remember that they are employees too?
Sure. Human resources professionals sit at the intersection of work, power, politics, and money. It's a real important intersection. It's an intersection with a lot of privilege, and we have the ability, we have the purpose, we have the singular responsibility of doing some good in the world. But sometimes we feel like we can't. Sometimes we feel like there are nothing but terrible choices. And for me, I truly believe that if human resources leaders and professionals just saw themselves as employees first and looked a little bit deeper, they would understand that they could solve some of their own problems and thereby have a positive cascading effect on the workforce. So this is really important to me, because I think if we take up the mantle of fixing the issues in our own lives, we could change the world.
Got it. So some of the things that I've been talking to other HR leaders about, as they've been telling me how they're helping their companies navigate through COVID, navigate through 2020, and ultimately help reduce the stress and anxiety of their workforce, is that it's a huge challenge for them to try to focus on the workforce, but then also try to prioritize themselves. Or as a cliche on the internet goes, you know, put your mask on first. So how would you advise HR leaders to do that?
Well, one of the things that HR leaders are very good at doing is sending out surveys and asking questions and trying to figure out what's going on with people. They hold roundtables. They listen. They just do walk-bys and drive-bys. And I think applying some of that methodology to our own lives is really important as a first step. So if you're a human resources leader in Peoria, Illinois, or Denver, Colorado, and you are burnt out, you're tired, you're caring for older individuals in your lives or people who are immunocompromised, and you also have children of your own, the struggles that you have are important. And they are also very common within the workforce. So if you were to just get very quiet, make a list of the things that are going on in your own lives and start there, it is totally fair to assume that other people are going through that at work. And if you can just start to chip away at some of the issues that you're facing, I truly believe that you will have a positive impact on the workforce. But that takes bravery, that takes courage, that takes dialing it back like 20% and stop obsessing with what your CEO thinks or what your, you know, chief executive officer or ELT think, and start to really get in touch with who you are as a worker, as a human being. It's dangerous. It feels a little risky because we think we have to be these selfless individuals. But by being selfless individuals, we're often less effective and less distant, or more distant rather. So I just really feel as if it takes these moments of reflection and commitment to the own issues in our lives, but we can do it.
On our show, I like to make sure that we're as clear as possible with some of the things that we're talking about. Yeah. And so when I hear acronyms, I try to make sure that we're breaking them down. So when you say ELT, are you talking about the executive leadership team?
I am. So I'll give you an example. I'm currently working with a woman right now who is in a strong position of leadership in her HR department. And her executive leadership team has come to her regularly with all of these requests. Like, first it was standing up a work from home program within weeks. Then it was really talking to people about wellness. Then it was already we're back to returning to work, right? There were all these demands that were coming in. And my client felt overwhelmed and a little depressed and a little anxious. And she had all sorts of other issues going on in her life, like childcare issues and really trying to figure out on her own how to work from home and manage it with her partner. And instead of really dialing it in and feeling her feelings, she tried to put that to the side and focus on the demands of her leadership team. And, you know, she's a woman and these were men coming to her making demands. And we really talked about what it was like to be a woman in that role, what it was like to hear these unrealistic requests, and how to be brave and bold in the moment, and how to tap into her feelings and express her own issues in a positive way to her leadership team and manage their expectations and start to really have a human relationship with her workforce. So it did nobody any good when she pretended to be this high-powered internal consultant who didn't have any feelings. But by being a little vulnerable, by relating to people who were struggling, she started to make some headway. She started to actually get some grace from her leadership team. And she was able to say, you know, I don't have all the answers. I need some resources. Can we start to pull in some expertise? Can we start to get some help in our organization? But I'll tell you what, Bruce, it was not an easy journey for her, like so many people out there, because again, HR leaders don't think of themselves as employees. They think of themselves as like these robots or these individuals who are not allowed to show any vulnerability or weakness, and it makes them less effective. Does that make sense?
It does. It's interesting because as I'm hearing you talk, it makes the HR role seem very meta in the sense that you're a part of the company, you're helping to make sure that you are cultivating the best employees possible. Yet you're an employee, and so who creates a career map or a performance guide or anything around how you become better if you're responsible for everyone else, but then you also have to help the CEO and the leadership team, not only with helping them become better as individuals from a performance standpoint, but then also have to be the North Star as to how the whole workforce operates So it almost seems like you're on an island. And to your point, you really have to always be externally focused, which makes it really difficult for you to be internally focused. And I know I speak to other tech founders when I'm talking to my tribe about how lonely it can be as a founder, but this is actually reinforcing how lonely it could be as an HR leader.
Well, what I heard you say is a lot of have to's and should is. And I think the future of work requires us to stop saying that. And the future of human resources requires us to stop saying that. Do we have to be the North Star? Do we have to be this rigorous advisor to our CEOs? You know, we don't allow people in our organization to say, I don't understand finance, so I'm going to leave it to the CFO to tell me how to run my department or my division. No, we require our leaders to have a certain financial competence. And I think gone are the days when we can have leaders who say, I don't understand people. That's what HR is for. Those days are over. And I think it's an unrealistic expectation to expect that our HR leaders be the mother, the father, the parental figure of the workforce and dissociate ourselves from our own human condition. So for me, I believe that fixing work is an inside-out job. And all of us are required to be responsible for our own employee experiences. That means managers are responsible and accountable, employees are responsible, accountable, and HR is responsible and accountable. So if you take that approach that we are all responsible for making the workforce better, this does not all fall on HR's shoulders. The answer, though, is to start getting managers, supervisors, and even line leaders and regular employees involved in the act of doing HR. And a lot of people say, well, you know, if managers are suddenly responsible for HR and employees are responsible for their own employee experience, what job does HR have? And I will tell you, anybody who clings onto anything, they go down with the ship. There is a future out there for human resources, and it looks nothing like it did in 2019. So I don't necessarily have all the answers about the future state of HR, but if people are constantly coming to you to solve problems, that's a model that's dying. You fix work by fixing yourself. Self-leadership is the model of the future. And the sooner that HR can get behind that and actually start to embody it and teach it, the faster we're going to become relevant in 2021 and beyond.
Wow, you're really dropping some gems today. I like it. My mind is spinning. So this is interesting. This is a very interesting, unique perspective. So for all of the HR leaders out there listening to this episode and hearing you say what the potential future of their job should look like, but more importantly, what the future of self-leadership and everyone internalizing the HR role or duties, regardless of the role that you're in, how did you get started on that? Because it seems like it's more of a culture shift for the company and a mindset shift for the HR leader themselves than it is actual doing work or doing specific things to change the company. You get what I'm saying? It seems like it's more of a mindset shift that needs to go viral within your organization.
Yeah, employees and, you know, line leaders are never going to select benefits. They're never going to create a compensation system. They're never going to oversee employee relations issues. But one of the biggest shifts that you can make in your mindset is that you're not there to solve problems. You're there to help other people solve their problems. So there are certain things that only HR can do. Only we can really be in the center of standing up a work from home program, for example, or a return to work program. But we can start to involve other people in solving the problem. The other thing is that no matter how far away we try to get from employee relations issues, they always end up back on our desks. And I really think there's a role for teaching people conflict resolution and better communication. You know, back in the day when I worked as a human resources director, I'd like to say that I was strategic. I'd like to say that I was working with the business, but I was still refereeing fights all day long. And sometimes those fights were within human resources. And I just thought to myself, how can these individuals who pay mortgages and raise children come to work and completely forget how to be kind to one another? And part of it was that I was enabling them. I was inserting myself in a role that was totally inappropriate. And as long as I said, okay, my door is always open and you can always come to me with problems, people always came to me with problems. Now, I wanted to hear the big stuff, but I didn't want to hear about people who were loud in the office or eating food at their desks. And I know some of that doesn't exist anymore, but there are still interpersonal problems that come up through Zoom and through FaceTime and on Slack. And as long as we still make ourselves available for the small stuff, we never get to the bigger stuff. We never get to solving problems that really affect people at scale. So again, I think you're right that this is a mind shift change and challenge, but it's absolutely possible. It's possible to start thinking about ourselves as employees, knocking out some of these problems that we face on a day-to-day basis, and then having our eye on the prize of aligning people with their purpose and improving productivity and profitability within the organization.
So I totally get that HR leaders should prioritize high value items and high value actions over a lot of the other things so that they can become strategic. But historically, and I'm assuming probably in too many organizations that we should have today, they probably still exist in a space where people don't trust HR. They don't really think HR has their back. And too many people believe that HR is only there to represent the company to make sure that they're not getting sued or they're not getting in trouble. So it seems like this puts HR in a tough spot, because if that's already the way that too many people look at them, I mean, I know some fantastic HR leaders that are really innovative and forward-thinking tech companies, yet the employees still look at their people ops team as the cops or as the principal. So how do you balance those two when on one hand, you want to have this open door policy, hey, I'm here for you, I want to show you the value that I could bring to you from a people empathy standpoint. But then at the same time, I'm also trying to give you this tough love to say, you know what, some of these things you should just resolve yourself without it seeming like I'm just pushing you off because I don't want to deal with it. How do you manage those two?
So there's all sorts of learned helplessness baked into that question, because first and foremost, if you work somewhere that doesn't value you as an HR leader, what are you working there for? Like, we still have choices in this country. We still have the ability to say, you know what, this isn't for me. And chances are, if you work in an environment that doesn't value human resources, look around, because it's more likely that they're going to stay the same than you're going to change anybody's mind. Like, Bob Sutton has done a tremendous amount of research on this. And if you work in an environment that doesn't value you and what you bring, that's a toxic work environment. Look around. It's never going to change. In fact, it is an unhealthy journey to think that you're the one who's single-handedly going to change people's minds. Number two, you can say yes and no, and you can speak out when people have assumptions that are incorrect. I can't tell you how many times in my work environment somebody said to me, I don't trust you. I don't believe you. We've got a history of problems. And my answer to that is, I don't care. I'm here having a tough conversation with you right now. Like, let's talk about it. Let's resolve it. And let's never discuss it again. Judge me by my actions, not by this weird amorphous reputation that human resources has. So it's about having those tough conversations as well. And then finally, I think one of the things that we need to do is stop pretending like we do have an open door policy and we can solve all these problems, because there are some problems that are unsolvable. There are some problems that are inappropriate for us to jump into. And there are some problems that aren't really even problems in the organization. Things that are problems: inequity, inequality, misogyny, homophobia, racism, sexism. Two people arguing over something stupid because they just can't figure out how to get along, that's on them. That's not on HR to fix. And so I just feel as if sometimes we insert ourselves into the small stuff to our own detriment.
Laura, you have a book coming out, which I can't wait to read it. But can you tell our audience what is it about and what inspired you to write it?
Sure. Thanks for asking. So I have a book coming out January 12th, 2021, called Betting on You, How to Put Yourself First and Finally Take Control of Your Career. And what I've done is take the lessons that I've learned in human resources over the past 25 years and really try to democratize them, to give them away, to help people understand this concept of self-leadership, to understand that putting yourself first is exactly what businesses do. They create responsible and conservative balance sheets. They invest in their own learning. they fight for what's rightly theirs. And I think we could do that as well. And if we did it, we actually could have a better and a healthier relationship with human resources. So it's really a book that I'm proud of. It's got a lot of lessons in there from my life. And hopefully other people will find the stories to resonate with them as well.
And who's the intended audience for this book?
Sure. I have a couple of intended audiences. The first are people who are currently in the workforce, who are probably between the ages of like 28 and 35, who are really starting to feel the pressures of work. And they like what they do, but they may not like these corporate systems that they're enmeshed in. So I'm really trying to help those individuals understand the systems and try to make the best of them and make good decisions. But I also believe this book is for anybody who really is struggling at work. And that includes human resources leaders. How to figure out how to prioritize yourself and live a better life. Because I believe that if you elevate yourself personally, you elevate yourself professionally.
To bring this back full circle to the topic, as HR leaders are trying to help their employees reduce stress and anxiety, to your point, HR leaders are employees too. And like you were saying in your book, you really have to prioritize yourself and have some type of self-care in order to take care of others. So I would like to end this interview with you telling our audience, what are some of the things that they can and should do as an HR leader to be able to practice self-care? And obviously there's working out and taking breaks and a lot of other things, but from a strategic standpoint, what does self-care look like and prioritizing yourself look like as an HR leader, where you also feel that you're not abandoning the workforce or letting them down, especially during the challenging times of 2020?
Absolutely. That's a great question. Well, I believe that self-care is a product and well-being is a way of living. So I believe there are four things that we can do to really be more effective individuals in the workforce and to do great work, to do the work that HR requires of us. We do need to focus on well-being. And that's not working out, that's not taking a yoga class. That means really living a life with integrity where we're fueling ourselves to do the things we were meant to do in the world. So whether that is eating less corporate food, whether that's sleeping more, getting a handle on our working hours, only you can answer the question of how do I improve my well-being? But that question is really important. And chances are you cannot buy a solution off the shelf. That answer comes from within. The second thing we need to do is we need to prioritize our finances, because we cannot do great work if we are in debt or if our lives are chaotic. And this is an incredibly challenging time during COVID. Foreclosures are up, evictions are up, layoffs are up. So what do we need to do in order to live a life with integrity? We need to start paying ourselves first, really investing in our own balance sheet. So I cover that. The third thing I cover is making sure we double down on our own learning and development, because if we're not learning, we're not growing, and we're actually dying. And then the fourth and final thing I cover in the book is that we need to understand how to take risks. And I teach a methodology in the book called the pre-mortem to help people understand how they may fail before they fail to improve their chances of success by over 30%. So those are the four areas that I cover in the book that I think are going to be great for HR leaders to really take control of their career and do the most effective and important and meaningful work of their lives.
Thank you so much for sharing that and for dropping so many gems of wisdom on the show and for doing the hard job of making me look smart twice now.
Bruce, so, you're terrific.
Really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Laurie, thanks for being on the podcast. So where can people find you, your book, your websites, all the things that you're doing? Where can they find it online?
Sure. I have one easy hack to remember. I have a podcast called Punk Rock HR. So if you go to punkrockhr.com, you can find everything. The book, the podcast, the blog, and also photos of my foster kittens. So come on, it's a one-stop shop.
Awesome. Awesome. So if you enjoyed this podcast as much as Laurie and I did creating it, then please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes, because it shows that you care and that we're creating great content. Also, if this is the very first Employee Cycle episode that you've ever heard, and you came here because you're either already a super fan of Laurie or you just thought that the concept or the topic was so compelling you had to listen, yet you're hungry for more, then please subscribe to the Employee Cycle Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. And last but not least, all you HR and people leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.